What's up, y'all? Welcome into the Jack Vita Show. I'm your host, as always, Jack Vita. Here we are taping, I believe this will be our third edition in our MLB preview series. Today, it's the NL East. Earlier this week, we had our AL West podcast drop and our NL West podcast. We're taping this on Monday, March 18th, 2024. The intention is for this to run on this Friday later in the week. So it's possible that some news has occurred over the past week. Hopefully no injuries, maybe a free agent signing or a trade or two. We'll see. So just so you know, this is a little dated. It's possible that some rosters have changed or whatever. But at the time of this recording, it's March 18th. And today we're going to dive into the NL East. First of all, before we do that, make sure you guys subscribe to this channel. This is a new YouTube channel that I've put together. I recently split up our entertainment and sports content. So all of our sports content will be on this channel, Jack Vita Show Sports, and our entertainment reality TV, that'll be on our original YouTube channel. So subscribe to both if you like both. If you like the sports, it's all here. We've got three more of these podcasts coming out previewing all things MLB for the 2024 season. Okay. Joining us today is a big-time baseball guy. He is the managing editor of Braves Today and Inside the Marlins over at Sports Illustrated and Fan Nation. Also a big-time prospects guy. Knows a lot about prospects. Lindsey Crosby, welcome to the show. It's great to have you here, my friend.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here. Excited to talk the NL East. This is my home division, obviously covering two of these teams, so teams that I watch a lot of, I see a lot of, and really follow this division a lot. I think it's got a lot of interesting storylines for 2024.
There's a lot to discuss with this division, and we're going to run through each team and give an outlook for each team as we do on all of these previews. I met Lindsey at the winter meetings. Very fun meeting you out there. First time collabing. This is exciting.
Yeah, I mean, we've been communicating back and forth and talking about doing stuff together. And we finally found a great place that dovetails with both with what we both do. So I love this.
All right. So let's just get started here, Lindsey. And let's get started with the team that has got to be the favorites, the Atlanta Braves. This is the team that you've covered for most of your time, really. I mean, and now you got the Marlins site. So you're diving into Marlins. We'll talk Marlins a little bit. What's the outlook for the Atlanta Braves coming into the season? What they do over the winter? How's this team shaping up?
So there's not a ton of changes from 2023 to now. They went 104-58 last year, a best record in baseball, had ridiculous offensive success, right? Matt Olson leads the league in home runs. Ronald Acuña Jr., 40-70 season, so he wins the MVP unanimously. Spencer Strider leads the league in strikeouts. Set a lot of Atlanta records as well. The home run record was an Atlanta record. The strikeout record was an Atlanta record. And so it wasn't really, there wasn't major changes, but the thing that I do like about the offseason for Alex Anthopoulos and the Atlanta Braves is it wasn't we're just going to run it back and do it again, right? Because I think the way the season ended, a second straight 3-1 elimination in the NLDS to the Phillies, the sense of urgency is palpable. I was at spring training a few weeks ago down in Northport, and everything that they've said, everything that they did in the offseason, it's obvious that they feel a sense of urgency about getting to the World Series. So when you look at the litany of trades that Alex Anthopoulos made, at the end of it, he came out with 5 years of contractual control of Jared Kelnick from the Seattle Mariners. He came out of it with Chris Sale, who was signed to an extension, so he's under team control for 2 years now, with a club option for a third. And then he came out of it with some relievers, lefty Ray Kerr, lefty Aaron Bummer, and a free agent signing in Ronaldo Lopez, who, as of Monday morning, has officially won the fifth starter's job and will be in the rotation on opening day. And everything that we've heard these players say, and Mr. Strider in particular, it's World Series or bust. They are focused on, we have to make the World Series. We are too good of a team to be satisfied making the postseason or being satisfied, you know, winning a series. We are at the point where we need to make the World Series. And so you see They go out and they get a postseason starter caliber arm when he's healthy in Chris Sale. They go out and find a way to upgrade the offense and defense, even though you have everybody under team control forever, right? And it's, I'm not going to say it's a big swing, because it's, in the grand scheme of things, 90% of the team is the same, but it's definitely a different approach than a lot of teams would have taken or could take after a season like they had, where they won 104 games and scored a ton of runs, right?
Yeah, it's a, I mean, I'll just come out and say it right now. The Atlanta Braves are my pick to win the National League this year. I mean, they were the best team last year. They had historic offense. Mm-hmm. I'm really interested to see how Kelnick plays out, because this is a guy with as a prospect guy, huge prospect just a few years ago, really not that long ago, last year, got off to a fantastic start to the season. And then it was actually odd because Seattle went on this huge win streak after he got injured. When he wasn't playing, the team was playing better. They shipped him out. I mean, if there's one place where you can go and like be a good reclamation project, it's Atlanta, right? It's Atlanta and LA.
Yeah, and I think Atlanta's uniquely situated for a guy like Jared Kelnick, because he doesn't need to do anything special to carry the team, right? Like, there were games in Seattle where he batted cleanup. And in Atlanta, at best, he's going to bat sixth, right? If not eighth or ninth. Because you have Matt Olson, because you have Ronald Acuña Jr., Austin Riley, Marcelo Ozuna, your designated hitter, hit 40 home runs and had 100 RBIs last year. And Kelenic's kind of admitted in spring that his confidence was hurt a little bit by how things went in Seattle. And he had some, I'm not going to say growing up to do, but he had some maturity to do, because he was a little too emotional with his game, right? He would be, you know, like, it was possible for him to get frustrated and upset. His injury was kicking a cooler in the dugout after striking out. Broke his foot and missed some time. And he's been making adjustments to his swing in spring. He hasn't played particularly well. He hasn't gotten, I think his batting average is below 100 in spring. It's like four hits in the entirety of Grapefruit League play. But he's already cut his strikeout rate in spring from what it was last season. And the team is happy with the progress that he's making, and they've said he's going to have plenty of runway to figure this out at the major league level. Now, the early indications were that Jared Kelnick was going to start every day. He was going to be an everyday player for Atlanta when last year they had a rotation of Eddie Rosario and Kevin Pillar, but Atlanta on, I think it was Thursday or Friday, went out and signed veteran outfielder Adam Duvall to a one-year, $3 million deal. It's his third stint with the Braves. They've twice traded for him, and now they, you know, signed him to a free agent contract. And so they've already come out and said Duvall will be the starter against lefties. Kelnick will be the starter against righties. So Kelnick's going to get two-thirds or more of the starts. Atlanta very seldomly faces lefty starters. I think last year, it was by far the lowest number in the league. I want to say they had 32 games out of the 162 in the regular season where they faced a lefty starter. Teams just avoid sending lefties up against Atlanta. And so outside of Philadelphia, who we'll get to in a few minutes, I don't think a lot of teams are going to be throwing lefties at Atlanta, but Jared Kelnick will get starts against righties. He'll get a majority of the play time, but Adam Duvall is there. If Kelnick continues to struggle and you're into late May, early June, it's possible that they make a move and send him to Triple A Gwinnett. But as of now, they've said everything as far as we're going to give him all the time in the world to figure it out while he's batting eighth or ninth. And all we ask him to do is play decent defense and do the best he can.
And we touched on it briefly. I just want to get your take on Chris Sale before we get to kind of our projection for this team.
Yeah, so I watched him in one of his spring training starts when I was down in Northport and talked to him afterwards. He said he is the healthiest he has been since 2018. The stuff looks really good, and what's more important, I think, is he feels good. He said he's been able to do long toss and bullpens all winter. He wasn't trying to rehab an injury like he has been the last few years, and he's open for whatever role the team plans to give him. Obviously, they're going to try to manage his innings. He barely threw over 100 last year. He has like 150 of the last three seasons combined. But he's down for whatever they tell him to do, whatever they ask him to do, whether it's bullpen, whether it's start, whether it's relief, whatever they want, he's willing to do. And his stuff looks as good as I've seen it since that 2018 season in Boston. And so because of that, I've got high expectations for Chris Sale. And I think my only question comes down to what type of workload does he get in 2024, simply because he hasn't really had the innings in the last couple of years to throw more than 130 or 40 regular season innings with the expectation of throwing another four or five times in October. So that's the real question. And between him and Ronaldo Lopez, a converted reliever going into the rotation as well, Atlanta's going to need some of those depth starters, but they used 13 different starters last year. They've got a six or seven deep collection in AAA that they can come up and throw all summer and then just get the studs healthy to October to let them eat in the postseason.
Ronaldo Lopez and Lucas Giolito separated for the first time in their careers.
And one of them, knock on wood, a lot healthier than the other. So
yeah,
hope Giolito gets well soon. He's a good dude.
Yeah. All right. So what's going to be the biggest concern with this team come postseason? I mean, last 2 years, they've gone in with the best record, I believe both years, or maybe they didn't have the 2022. They might not have had the best record.
They were close.
They had a bye.
Yeah, they were over 100 wins. They won the division on the final day on a tiebreaker versus the Mets, but they were one of the
best. The Dodgers won like 108 that year or whatever. Yeah. It was crazy. So the last 2 years they've gotten this bye. They've been great. And then they get into that DS and they've had difficulty with the team that we'll talk about next in a second. What's going to make, like, what's the biggest concern there? What's going to push them over the top this time around rather than years past?
I think the biggest concern is that something doesn't show up when you get to the postseason. If you look at 2022, the pitching wasn't really there. You had Max Fried, who was ill. Spencer Strider coming off an oblique injury. If you look in 23, the pitching for the most part was there outside of game 3 starter Bryce Elder, but the offense didn't show up. And both years, the team has kind of discussed that layoff that you get. This is a team unlike everybody else in baseball for the most part. Everybody on this roster plays almost every day. I mean, you had quite a few of these guys that if they didn't play all 162, they played 159, 158. And so it's really kind of an issue of how do they deal with that layoff, right?
Yeah, that's the thing for me. I mean, I look at this Braves team. I'm very high on them. And you just have to think, though, that this isn't going to keep happening, that one of these years they will get it clicking. They're going to, you know, have a chip on their shoulders, especially if they play Philly again, because it's like, oh, my gosh, like we can't let this happen 3 years in a row or whomever they play. Maybe that's just a bad draw. Maybe they get another team. I'm picking the Braves, though, to win the National League. I'm picking them to win this division. Their over under total is 101.5. That's a very high total. But last year, they won 104. Are you going over or under on the 101.5?
I'm going to go over on it simply because I feel like this offense could potentially be even better, right? And so I'm going to go over on that. I feel like your pitching's deeper than it was. I feel like your offense could be better. I'm going to go over.
All right, I'm going over as well. I mean, really, I think that this team, I think this team will be as good as it was last year. I don't really see this team dropping off. And I am interested in Chris Sale. Like you're getting me kind of excited to watch Chris Sale this year. If you can get, let's not say it's peak Chris Sale, but if it's Chris Sale from just a few years ago when in Boston, that's a huge addition to this rotation. I'm going to take the Braves. I'll go over. I'm going to say 103 wins.
Yeah, I think 103 or so kind of makes sense. If you look at, they scored 947 runs last year. I think their Pythagorean was like 101. They tend to be right there around the projections. I'm going to take 103, 104. Sounds realistic to me as well.
All right, we've got moving along. We'll go to the team with the next most excitement and also a huge fan base, the Philadelphia Phillies. Last year, 90 wins. Got to the NLCS for the second straight year, beat the Braves for the second straight year in the postseason. And I'm really interested in this Phillies team once again, because my take on last year's Phillies, Lindsay, I felt like last year really solidified that this is a player in the National League, that 2022 wasn't a flash in the pan, because it felt like, you know, they both the last few years they've gotten off to such a slow start. You get to June and they kick it into another gear. And I thought last year they were going to regress, and they ended up being a significantly better team because they had Trey Turner. Castellanos was playing much better. They got, now Harper's playing first base. He's healthy. Like, this Phillies team is good. And I think they kind of showed that they're going to be it looks like they're going to be a perennial playoff team for the time moving forward.
They have enough top-end talent where they can really kind of maintain things. And you saw the big change last year for them was getting not just Bryce Harper back in the lineup, but getting Bryce Harper back, you know, former multi-time yes. MVP back. And when they added him, how it improved the offense and the defense, because when he could play first base, you got Kyle Schwarber out of left. He was the worst graded outfield defender in all of baseball last year. You were able to put him back at designated hitter. And it gave you more, better defense, better offense. And the thing for this year that I'm watching for is they ran it back, right? I mean, they re-signed Aaron Nola. They are bringing back everybody from that roster. Didn't make any significant changes. And the two thoughts I have on that are, one, first thing I think about is the New York Mets, how they won over 100 games in 22. And for the most part, they ran it back. And they're just paying more money for some of their guys that they re-signed. And it didn't work out in 23 when injuries hit. And the Phillies really are driven by those stars, right? It's the season didn't get better until Harper came back, until Turner started hitting. Schwarber was like, they're driven by those top of the order, top of the pay scale guys. And I feel like the depth in this Phillies team is maybe hurting a little bit more because the farm system doesn't really have guys to fill in if something happens. And so you saw them having to go give major league deals to Coby Allard and guys like that this year because they didn't have the options from the farm system to come up and be a sixth or seventh or eighth starter. And so if you lose, like right now, Bryce Harper's dealing with some back issues. If Bryce Harper's not available for opening day, you're in something, does Cody Clemens play first base? The drop-off is a lot more significant, I feel like, for this Phillies team than some other options in the division if you lose one of those stars at the very top because they're so driven by the stars.
Yeah, that's a great point. It's a very top-heavy team, mm-hmm. to put it simply. It's funny you mention that because to mention what you mentioned, though, about the prospects thing, they had the breakout player of the Arizona Fall League, Oliver Dunn, and they shipped him to Milwaukee. And Dunn looks like he might make the Brewers' opening day roster, and he could be potentially a starting option at third base. So I feel like he could have helped them with some of that depth stuff, but they let him go. But they've got some other infielders I think they like.
Yeah, and I mean, it's something where Alec Bohm would probably kick over to first base if Harper couldn't play. But then again, now you have the question of who plays third base. He would have been a great option. You know, it's Edmundo Sosa is here. Does he maybe get play at third base? But the drop-off is significant. And I think the worst-case scenario for Philly is kind of like what happened late in the year last year, where like if Harper's ailing enough where he can't play defense, but he can still hit, and he has to go in at designated hitter, that has a cascading effect on everybody because now Schwarber's back out in left field. And Johan Rojas, there's still a lot of questions. Really good center field defender. Did a lot for them when he came up. But there's kind of some belief that he significantly outproduced offensively what to be expected. He batted 302. And there was some concern. I mean, in 2022 in the minors, he batted 244. Last year, he was batting 306 in AA. But there's some concern that he's not really a 300 hitter at the major league level. So if he takes a step back, or if you have an injury to him or Brandon Marsh, all of a sudden, the defense is a problem again. And it feels like the team is obviously good enough to go make the World Series. It just feels like the margin for error here is a little bit slimmer than maybe they would like.
So 89.5. Are you going over or under?
I'm really hesitant to bet under, but I think we have to have the caveat is I have over if they don't lose anybody for a significant period of time. So I'm going to say over. I think they'll win like 90, 91 games, similar to last year. I'm going to assume Trey Turner's not going to have a half season long slump, but I'll say over, but I don't love it. I don't love saying it.
Yeah, I don't feel super confident. I think 89.5 is actually a really great number for them. Mm-hmm. Because the thing is, I mean, the argument to go over would be, can they get going earlier in the season? Can they get it going in March, April? Like, can they just get that offense going early? And then if you play at the pace that you play from June on, you're looking at an upper 90s type win team in terms of you don't have to dig yourself out of that hole. But if the other side of that is if you get off to that slow start, it's going to be harder for you to win 90 games because they played at such a remarkable pace last year if you suffer an injury or two. So I actually think I'm going to take a slight under here. I think I'll go 89, just barely. So this is why this is not a number that if you're inclined to be betting on these things, neither of us feel super confident in this one, so don't take our advice.
It's a really good number. It's probably one of the better numbers I've seen for all of Major League Baseball this season.
All right, so moving our way down, let's just go, before we get to the Marlins, let's touch on the next biggest fan base, the New York Mets. Last year, 75 wins. Man, did things go so poorly for them. I had them winning the World Series. I thought that Ooh, team was...
A lot of people did.
I was so impressed with them. They very much impressed me in 22. They did so much better than I thought they would. Mm-hmm. And then I overcorrected by being too high on them in 23. I mean, last year I did so poorly. I had Mets over the Guardians. Or no, I had Guardians over the Mets. I had the Mets losing the World Series to the Cleveland Guardians.
Ouch.
Yeah, it was tough. It was not my year. We're bouncing back this year, though. So
not your proudest moment, yeah.
Yeah, keep all these over-under totals. Take it all with a grain of salt, my friends. Coming from me, at least.
Yeah. Mine are right. Mine are right, but Jack's might be off.
Yeah. Lindsey's right. He's always right.
The thing with the Mets that's really tough for me is I feel like they're in a tough place because they play in New York. And the expectations are always higher. I've seen them discussed as a potential playoff team, you know, a dark horse, things like that. And it feels like it's a season too early. They even said when they were trading Max Scherzer, they were looking at 2025 as the start of the next contention window. And I think this is going to be a big year to get some of their prospects up. Get a Jet Williams, get Ronnie Mauricio healthy after the ACL tear, get Luis Angel Acuna. But another team that, great year in 22, they paid a bunch of money to just bring some of their guys back, and it didn't work out last year. The big question for me right now is, with the Senga injury, how long is he going to be out for? And is this rotation good enough for 2024 if you don't have him for, say, half the season? Because, completely honest, things like shoulders terrify me a lot more than an elbow. Because we know so much about elbow injuries, right? And so if it comes down to a capsule tear in a shoulder, and not even the common one most guys have, but the one a different one in his shoulder versus an elbow injury, give me the elbow injury, because at least we're used to dealing with that. So Jose Quintana is your opening day starter. Luis Severino is your number two. Sean Manea is your number three. I just don't know if the pitching is going to be there on an every night basis for the Mets to win 80 games, unless you assume a lot of these top prospects like a Mike Vasile and a Christian Scott are going to make it up this season. And there's no indications that they're going to have them up in enough time for them to make a difference this year.
Yeah, the Mets, I mean, it just kind of feels like a reset kind of year, mm-hmm, where it's like, we're just like on a much smaller scale of what the Dodgers did last year. The Dodgers, obviously, the Dodgers, and they have much better personnel, much better talent, but they didn't really go for it in the offseason. They were waiting to make their big move this offseason, and they reloaded everything, and they're obviously the favorites, even though I have the Braves instead of the Dodgers, and you can go and check out my NL West preview to hear what I have to say about the Dodgers, but the Mets, it's kind of like a regrouping year here. We're going to try to get some of these prospects up. We might, you know, could they trade some guys if they get off to a poor start? I mean, have they taken care of Alonso yet?
They have not taken care of Alonso. He's in a walk year. He's 29. I think he'll be 30 after the season, maybe. Sterling Marte, 35. I believe it's the last year of his deal too. Like there's veterans that you can move. A lot of these pitchers came in on 1 year deals or have opt outs after the first season. Like there's plenty of pieces you could move late in the season. And I still think that's the most likely scenario over all of these reclamation projects hitting their 90th percentile projections and all of the young players, Brett Beatty starts raking at third and all of that stuff. I still think it's more likely that they stumble a little bit, they promote the prospects mid-season or so, and then ship out some of the veterans at the end of July to give those prospects room to grow. And you look at 25 as the year where you take your core of Nimmo and Lindor and McNeil, surround them by a bunch of youth, and see if you can make a run at that point.
Yeah, and we also have to mention, like, a year ago, they had the largest payroll in MLB history, and it was a colossal disappointment. And now I think they'd love to shed some payroll. You got David Stearns coming in, new leadership in that organization. They have a new manager now too, which I actually think that might actually, I think Buck was a huge reason why they won 100 some games or 9,900 games 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. Interesting to see how they perform under Carlos Mendoza, because I think Buck is a pretty good manager who you get. He seems to get the most out of his club. So I 80.5 is where they are at with FanDuel's sportsbook. And they won 75 games last year. I don't see a 6-game improvement from this team.
I don't either. Like I'm taking the under. I think you're solidly below 500, and you're probably, I don't know if you're third or fourth in the division, but unless you get the prospects up early and a lot of them hit the ground running, I just don't see them in getting better by 6 wins when you've lost so much from your rotation, including your best pitcher for a while in Senga, and you know, just have a bunch of reclamation projects in your rotation and guys trying to show what they have to highlight for a trade in your lineup.
I got nothing really else to add on this team. I think we're in full agreement when it comes to the Mets. I'll give them one more win than last year. I'll give them 76. But I would not be surprised if that win total is lower, because I could totally see a situation where they do ship some of these guys out of town at the deadline. Mm-hmm. They choose not to extend Alonso. They trade him, and that's going to make your team worse. So, you know, you got the injury bug with this team. I don't know. And I don't think that's going to be the worst thing in the world for what the long-term plan is for this team. I mean, I actually think it can be a good thing, because you end up giving more opportunities to these prospects if and when they are ready to come up. So I don't know. I think the Mets are, and they even said it last year. They told Max Scherzer, we're not trying to compete in 2024, essentially. So I don't know. I would not be surprised if their win total dips below 70.
Yeah, I mean I think they could easily be the second worst team in this division if a lot of things don't break right. And that's kind of an indictment on the Marlins. Well, you know, we'll see what happens. We'll get to them in a second. But this could be a pretty bad team if Senga's injury lingers and some of these rotation options don't figure it out quickly.
Well, I think it's possible they end up having the worst record in this division. I mean, last year they had
the Nationals.
The Mets had the second worst record last year. The Nationals were only 4 games behind them. Showed some flashes at some points. The Nationals, let's talk about the Nationals here before we get to the Marlins, because this is a natural segue. The Nationals are 66.5. They won 71 last year. Why are they 5 or 6 games worse than last year?
I would assume it's because nobody's really enthused with their additions. They traded away Candelario last season to the Cubs. He's now with the Reds. This is something where they've at least tried to make the team better. And I think they probably, of all of the teams in this division, they have the prospects with the highest ceiling that they're trying to get to the majors between Dylan Cruz, James Wood, Brady House is a guy that I think could be a really good third baseman. And Nick Senzel is not blocking anybody at third base. And so, like, I could see a runway here to getting better production this year than you got last year, all based on when can you get those prospects up and what can the few guys you brought in, your Jesse Winker, your Eddie Rosario, things like that. Although I will say they haven't made necessarily the best decisions with how they're choosing to use some of these personnel. They're going to give Joey Gallo an everyday starting job at first base. They want to use Eddie Rosario in center field, not left or right. So a little bit of questions about the beginning of the season, but I do think the prospects could get up soon and have the highest ceiling of any of the prospects in this division we've talked about so far.
So you're a big prospect guy, obviously. It seems like the sentiment around this team is like a lot of people like their prospects, but there are only a couple of prospects that people really love. Like a lot of people are like, okay, these guys look solid. They look good. They have a lot of really good prospects, but only a couple of great prospects. Would you agree with that?
Yes, and I think a lot of that is because this organization doesn't have a great history really at developing and getting these prospects to the majors and them being excellent. And I think that's probably why you look a little bit kind of hesitant about what these guys could do, right? They have a trio of outfielders that are really interesting that have significant flaws in Elijah Green, who swings and misses way too much, Robert Hassel, who can't seem to really hit for enough power, and nobody really trusts the Nationals to figure that out, right? And so the development, getting those top three, your Dylan Cruz, your James Wood, and Brady House, a lot of people are just kind of giving the credit to the prospects that, hey, they're good enough where they're going to figure it out. But nobody really trusts the organization because they don't have a great history at getting these guys to the majors and making them good major leaguers. Look at Keibert Ruiz and some of those guys who have come up and been a little bit underwhelming so far in Washington.
Well, I think it's interesting because I think you look at the past 5 years and it's been really underwhelming in terms of Washington. Mm-hmm. You know, Keibert Ruiz and another, I'll give you another example. Yeah, Carter Kieboom's a great example. That's exactly where I was going.
Victor Robles, but, too.
Yeah, Victor Robles.
We can just keep going.
But, Lindsay, you can rewind it back and you go 10 years back. And now you're talking about Anthony Rendon, Trey Turner. Obviously, I mean, if you want to go way back, you go to Harper. A lot of those pitchers that they developed. Like, this had been, it's kind of interesting because it seems like they've been in a little bit of a slump with the prospect development for the last 5 years or so. Mm-hmm. But before that, they were among the cream of the crop at churning out talent.
Yeah, and I think the what if you kind of have with Washington is almost the same what if you have with Miami. It's they've developed a lot of really good players in their history, but none of those players are still here. You let Rendon walk in free agency, you trade away Turner, you trade away Soto, you know, Harper leaves. You have so many players that are not here anymore. And it's like, what if you had some of these guys still? Where would you be right now? And to turn around and look
Soto. At Soto, we forgot Soto.
Yeah, like you could just really forgot Juan Soto when we're talking about all these great players they've had that have left. And you look at what have they got in return for some of those guys. And the returns, they haven't really maximized the value on some of these returns yet. And so there's a giant what if with the Washington Nationals. And it's what if they were either better at developing these prospects or had kept some of those stars in the first place. But they've torn it down multiple times. And now you're in a scenario where we're optimistic that they'll outperform their projection of 66 wins, which is kind of embarrassing, really.
I think the thing is, yeah, they have not gotten the hauls on these trades. At least it doesn't look like it yet. And then some guys like Rendon and Harper, they just let walk. They didn't trade those guys. So
yeah, at least they traded Soto and got something back. Now,
yeah,
they need to get those players to the majors, but at least they got something back for him. Whereas Rendon and Harper were, I think, a compensatory pick and that's it.
Right. I don't know. I kind of like this team, honestly. I mean, 71 wins last year. Dylan Cruz and James Wood. Could you see those guys up this year, potentially? Maybe late in the season?
Both of them have had really good springs. I do think you could see them up later in the year because Washington's in that scenario of it's kind of a dangerous place to be. You don't really have anything to lose, right?
Right.
And so they absolutely could bring some of these guys up late in the year. And I think the smart thing to do is give them an audition. We've seen teams get better at this. Give them an audition in the final month of the season, but keep them short of getting, of losing prospect eligibility so that they can make a rookie of the year race in 2025. Because I do think Dylan Cruz, James Wood, Brady House, if things break right for any of those three guys, they could be rookie of the year caliber talents. And so your goal should be do everything you have to do to get those guys ready and then to not block them at the major league level. Trade folks if you have to. Trade Rosario if you have to. Trade, if anybody wants Victor Robles, trade him. You know, trade whoever you have to get those guys in the lineup late in the year so you can see what they have and let them acclimate as much as possible while still having prospect eligibility. Because the 24 rookie of the year race is going to be weird with Yamamoto in LA, but 25 could potentially be wide open.
Well, and a couple other guys that I also am intrigued by, Trey Lipscomb.
He has played everywhere. He has played every, like a lot of places have him making the team out of spring training. He's played everywhere in that infield this year. He's played some outfield too, I believe, in his career. And so that's the type of multi-position guy. Every great team has had that guy who just played every single position. Lipscomb could be a guy that, you know, kind of like a Ben Zobrist that plays a second, plays a short, plays a third, can play outfield and gets five starts a week while not spending more than one day at any spot. That can totally happen.
I got a good look at him at the fall league. Solid player. We could see him. And then the other one that I feel like I'm a little higher than others are is DJ Hirsch. He's got such a nice changeup. I think he's had a pretty good spring. Look for him to potentially, I don't know. I mean, you're a little more tapped into like the timelines and all these guys and where they might fit in, but there's kind of been some talk about, is he a starter? Is he a reliever? I think he can 100% be a very good back in the rotation starter.
Yeah. The big thing for him is just cutting down the walks a little bit. He walked like 13.5% of guys last year. League average is closer to 10%. So I think that's going to keep him from being a little higher up in the rotation, but he absolutely can go. It was a coup to get him from the Cubs. A lot of Cubs fans were not happy that he was moved. And I do think that the fastball is something. He's not super impressive on paper. He throws low 90s, but it's got a low vertical approach angle, good extension. It really kind of plays up off of that. And then, like you said, the changeup is really, really good, and they work really well together. And so I do like him. I do think he's one of those guys. You have the runway here. You let him take starts as the number five guy in the rotation for a good portion of the year, or probably later in the year. That's when they call him up. He was in Double A last year. And another guy who you could potentially slot in for 25 as a full-time rotation member and just gives you a younger rotation because you also have guys like Mackenzie Gore's 25, Jake Irvin's 27, Josiah Gray's 26, I think. So to give you four guys under the age of 30 to go along with Patrick Corbin, it's not a terrible rotation. If any of those guys improve by 5% and Corbin just maintains the better form he showed last year, I think it's a pretty decent rotation.
Josiah Gray had a really good first half last year. I think he may have dropped off a little bit in the second half, but he's very good. CJ Abrams at shortstop is going to probably be the guy to watch, right?
A lot of people have him as a breakout this year, right? Something where he really, second half, really kind of started to get a better idea of how opposing teams were attacking him, how he could adjust what he was doing to take advantage of what opposing teams were willing to give him versus just trying to, I'm going to do my thing no matter what. Well, let's adjust to, they're trying to pitch me inside, let me stop trying to, you know, do this and just take what they give me, stuff like that. I really think he could run more than he has in previous seasons. I do think then installing him at leadoff, having a little more protection in that lineup, I do think he could surprise people this year. And if he has a good offensive year, I think that raises the ceiling of this team, and they probably get above that 66.5 mark.
Anybody else in this lineup that you're intrigued by?
Lane Thomas, I feel like, is perpetually a little underrated. I believe he's going to be playing a lot of right field. And someone, I wouldn't be surprised to see him lead this team in homers. But I think he's got more than, you know, a 20 homer. I think he has a 25 or 30 homer season in him if everything breaks right. And a lot of what I've seen in spring, I believe they have him batting second or third. So they have a lot of faith. You put Abrams on consistently in front of him, and you let Lane Thomas get good pitches to hit if he can get some protection. I feel like he could have a really big year. And then obviously, if you choose to trade him, which I don't think they should, he's only 28, but he has a year plus of control left and could get you a decent return too if you decide to move him. But I think Lane Thomas is one of your three outfielders next year, along with Dylan Cruz and James Wood.
All right, 66.5. You guys know where I'm going. I'm going over on this. You can tell the tone of me this whole time. What do you think, Lindsay?
I am also taking over on this. I think that they're going to surprise people, and I think when the prospects get up, they'll be better than you're expecting.
Yeah, I think this is like a... I mean, they won 71 last year. I think they're better than last year. Like, I think this is... And also, I think the Mets, as we talked about, I think the Mets are going to be potentially worse. I don't know. I think that Washington, I think they're going to be a better team this year. I've got them around. I'll give them 70. Let's give them 74 wins. I'll give them three win improvement, marginal improvement, but potential to, you know, maybe get up a little higher in the 70s as well.
I can put them in the 70s as well. And I think it's going to be, they were 6-7 against the Mets last year, but they were 2-11 against Miami. And I think that's going to change this year. I've got a lot of questions about this Miami team. I think they'll do better against both. They'll feast against both Miami and New York. And I think they'll be in the mid-70s too.
And we talked about it. I like this rotation. I think this is at least a solid rotation. It might not be like upper echelon. It's got the potential to be a very good rotation. And if you've got a decent rotation, you can stay competitive. You can stay within. You're not going to just get trounced and lose 100 games.
Yeah, like if you can avoid letting teams score 4 runs in the first inning, I mean, you're good for the most part. I feel like Josiah Gray blew up a little bit by that last year. But as long as you can keep run totals manageable, I feel like you have enough offense where you can stay in games and surprise some people.
Yep. And keep an eye. I said it again. DJ Hers. He's probably, I bet he's up like, I don't know what, July, maybe August, later in the year. He's got pitch in AAA, but.
Probably second half. Yeah.
Yeah. I think he's going to impress some people. And, you know, it actually, you mentioned some Cubs fans were disappointed. And I'm sure they were, but also living in Chicago, there was a lot of like, oh, DJ Hers, okay, who's this guy? Just compared to like how many prospects they have in their system. Like, yeah. I almost think he's underrated as a prospect. I think he's better than, I mean, he was ranked probably like 18, 19 last year. Now he's number 11 in Washington. I think he's going to be a high impact player.
Yeah. Sometimes when you see the return, you get lost by organizationally where they're ranked, not realizing the Cubs have a really good farm system. The standard is a lot higher than it would be somewhere else. And he was number 11 for the Nationals. He's going to be a top 15 prospect in most other systems. The Cubs are just stacked. He'd be a top 10 prospect in either Miami or Atlanta system.
Yeah. Well, and also they're all subjective rankings. It doesn't even, you know, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. So, you know, some people are higher on him than others. And I guess I'm probably a little higher on him than others may be. So I don't know. I think Washington could be a fun little watch if some of these players, if these prospects come up at the end of the year, I could totally see them being a team where they're out of it, but like they could play spoiler to one of these teams late in the season. They start getting it clicking. Some of these prospects are coming alive. And then you're looking at next year as like, hey, is this a 500 team next year? We'll see.
You know, like, are we the third best team in the division all of a sudden? Like it, there's a realistic path to that happening. And I don't remember a time since this, I'm going to call it not a tank, but since this
teardown
happened, I can't remember a time where we could say, yeah, I realistically could see how they could compete next year. And so that's nice. I'm happy for Washington fans that they have that finally.
All right. The final team in this division is this is great. We bookend with the team you've been covering for a while and the team that you're now just starting to cover. Miami Marlins last year made the postseason at 84 wins. I know you're going to talk about it. I'll make mention of it.
Yep.
Quite a run differential there. I believe they were what, -57 or
-57. Yes.
Oh my gosh.
That was the lowest run differential of any team to make the playoffs. And like it gets worse because it feels like the success of the Miami Marlins in 2023 was fueled by an unsustainable winning percentage in one-run games. There were 33-14 in one-run games, a 7.02 winning percentage, and that is something that absolutely regresses to the mean every single time it happens. And if you look at their runs, they were they allowed 723. They should have scored one more run. They scored 666 runs. But the Pythagorean win-loss record, what you would just do based off the scoring, was 75-87. And so, like, I think you see a lot of that in the projections where you see they're projected for 77.5 wins this year. I think that's a realistic projection versus what they did last year because so much of that was fluky. And then that doesn't even count the whole home run issue that you're trying to figure out this year. Because they hit 166. I think average last year was 196. So they're below average already. And then Jorge Soler took his 36 home runs and went to San Francisco. So you're bringing back 130 home runs from last year's team. Where do you get the additional home run production? Unless you count on career years from Josh Bell and Jake Berger, I don't really see where you make up those 36 home runs. And we know MLB is driven by home runs right now.
And perhaps the biggest loss to the organization, Kim Ng. That was one where I talked to executives who just couldn't believe that that happened. I talked to executives who she did a very, very good job for mm-hmm. what she was given with that team. Made the playoffs last year. That was quite surprising to see her exit from that organization.
And not to like editorialize on it, but the way it happened was a little bit embarrassing for the Marlins too, because there was a mutual yes. option in her contract. They picked it up and she declined it. And so they scramble, they go out, they get Peter Bendix from the Tampa Bay Rays. He brings over some of his people from his front office and trades for a few players. But it really kind of set Miami back this offseason. It really felt from the outside like they were not expecting to have to hire a GM this hiring cycle. And so they, in essence, were sitting out of free agency all the way until late February is the first time they signed a major league free agent, and that was Tim Anderson on a one-year deal. And it's just, you can see a path to being competitive if everything goes right for this team, but it's really hard to see a path to making the postseason or even being better than they were last year because of the run scoring thing and now because of all the injuries they have in the rotation too.
Tim Anderson, I'm glad you mentioned him. Fresh start for TA. This is what a fall from grace for this guy. I mean, batting title, I think in 2019, I want to say. 19. He broke out, and I want to say, I think it was 19 was his real big breakout year. And then 19, 20, 21, he was a, you know, big-time star that the league was marketing. And then you get, like, last year, he had such a poor, poor season. Capped by getting knocked out by Jose Ramirez.
Golly. I can't remember the exact stat, but it was either his OPS plus, which was 60, or his OPS, which was 582. One of those two was the lowest of any player that got at least 100 starts last season. I mean, he hit one total home run. It's a guy who hit 20 homers in 2018. He hit one home run last year, and it was late in the year, too. He went a long time before he got... I think he got knocked out more times than he hit home runs all the way until, like, August. And he's discussed a little bit at camp this year about he was dealing with some injuries last year. He was kind of playing through some stuff that was bugging him from late in 22. And then just getting around Luis Arraez and getting some reinforcement as to the contact-heavy approach that he used to have. I mean, people forget he batted 335 in 2019. Like you said, he won a batting title. He led all of baseball in batting average in 2019. He batted over 300 as recently as 2022. You can see a path where if he is back to not what he was in 2019, but just early career Tim Anderson, combined with everybody else maintaining or improving off of last year's performance. Berger and Bell both had less strikeouts when they got to Miami than they had at their previous stops. You can see a path to them being competitive. I just don't see how they're better than last year. And like I already said, I think last year was really fluky as far as the wins in one-run games and outscoring or significantly outperforming their runs scored versus runs allowed.
We'll touch on the run differential thing again in a second. One more thing on Tim Anderson is just like, I'm very interested because one thing that I thought was very interesting was, I keep saying that, very interesting, very interesting. Last year at the World Baseball Classic, Mark DeRosa, the manager of Team USA, had him playing second base, and he looked so much better at second base defensively. He had a very good tournament. Are they planning on playing him at short or second base primarily? Because I did go to one spring training game as a fan. I watched them play the Yankees while I was in Tampa, and he was playing shortstop in that game.
Yeah, so he's reportedly recovered from the MCL injury that he was dealing with last year, and that is what was hurting him at shortstop. He didn't have the range he normally had. He didn't have the ability to really plant and get his base behind his throws, and so that's what was hurting him at shortstop. That's why he looked so much better at second, because he could do everything with his arm. He didn't have to really use that lower body. They are mostly going to play him at shortstop as of now. You have a plan for Luis Arraez will be doing a lot of second base or DH. I do think there is a path if John Birdie looks better at the plate this year. I do think there is a path where you could have John Birdie at short. You could have Tim Anderson at second. You could have Luis Arraez at either first or DH. The issue you have is Avisail Garcia is stealing money from the organization at this point and is clogging up the DH spot. And the sooner that they commit to moving Avisail Garcia, benching him, cutting him, trading him, whatever it might be, I think the better this team could be when you move Arraez off of second and put him at either first or DH, put Anderson at second and put Birdie in an everyday role at short. Because you have plenty of infield, outfield flex options with Fidel Brujan and Nick Gordon. You don't need Birdie to play utility role. You can let him play shortstop.
Yeah, and I have had a very good look at Tim Anderson throughout his career living in Chicago.
Yeah.
And Tim has a chance to prove me wrong. I think he should play second base. I think he's a second baseman. He's a great athlete. He's got the ability to play short, but just not the consistency. A lot of mistakes. And I think he's, from what I've seen, I think he'd be a better second baseman. So
I do too.
I would feel good, but for him, for his own sake, I think that'd be a good spot for him long term.
Yeah. And I think we'd be remiss if we didn't touch on all of the rotation injuries that Miami's dealing with. Obviously, yeah. Sandy is out for the year after Tommy John surgery, but you're in a situation, Edward Cabrera, Braxton Garrett, neither one of them will be ready for opening day. They've had shoulder issues in spring. Both of them are working on playing catch as we record this, and so not going to be ready. They're going to start on the injured list. And then Yuri Perez has been dealing with a broken fingernail in spring, made him leave two starts. It's on his throwing hand. They put a fake nail on it. He couldn't throw a slider with that fake nail on. And then he did an entire outing with curveball and fastball only. But now he's reporting elbow soreness, and they're sending him to Dr. Keith Meister in Dallas to be looked at. We may get the results back by the time that this airs, but as of time of recording, we don't know how severe it is, but it's never a good thing when you send your young stud pitcher to a elbow surgeon to have imaging done. And so right now, your number two in the rotation is converted reliever AJ Puck. Your number three in the rotation is converted reliever Ryan Weathers. Trevor Rogers is your fourth, who barely pitched last year because of multiple injuries. And so four lefties in the rotation, which is wild. And then two, you have questions about what kind of workload can you get from any of these guys? Because the hurt guys have not gotten a typical spring training buildup. And the converted relievers and Trevor Rogers just don't have a history of significant workloads. And so this team that historically has been driven by this rotation has a ton of rotation questions right now.
And the rotation was why they made the playoffs last year. When you have a minus 57 run differential, that's because you're winning close games. And typically when you're winning close games, it's because you have a great pitching staff. And they did last year. They had a very good pitching staff. So now with all those questions with their pitching staff, you lose some of the power with Soler. I mean, it seems like a team due for regression, especially just with the run differential thing alone would be something that would tip a lot of people off to say that. Their number is 77.5. They won 84 last year. What do you think?
I'm going under on that. There's a very real scenario. If Eury Pérez is out for more than just, you know, a month or something, there's a very real scenario where the rotation's worse, the bullpen is worse because you no longer have Puck and Weathers back there. Puck was your closer last year. Yeah. And you have offensive questions where you can't score enough runs. And so there's a path to this team not being a 500 team this year. So I'm going to take the under on 77.5, and I'm not that conflicted about it. As terrible as that is to say, I'm not conflicted about that.
How many wins?
I'm going to say 72, maybe.
Yeah. They had 69 2 years ago. Nice. So you've got them closer to where they were 2 years ago than last year. And, you know, you mentioned Ryan Weathers. I actually think Ryan Weathers could impress some people. I thought he looked pretty good in some of his spot starts when he was pitching in San Diego. Yeah. He never really got an opportunity to remain in the rotation. So I wouldn't be surprised if he's okay. He might be good. Wasn't he a first-round pick? He was a high pick.
I believe he was. He did pitch more than 100 innings last year between San Diego, Miami, and the minor leagues for both. So he has a better chance of giving you more of a normal starter's workload than Puck does. But
yeah,
because he was in minor leagues for both teams as well. He went over 100 innings. He could probably give you at best 150, but even that's not really. That's five and dive for 30 starts, and that's it. I mean, it's not a great place right now for Miami when it comes to starting pitching, to the point where I wouldn't be surprised between now and when this comes out, they've signed one of those budget free agents that's out there right now.
So I will also go under, I think I'll give them 73 wins. How about that? 73 wins,
okay.
Which means I've got Washington as potentially the third place team in this division. I don't know. Have I talked you into Washington at all? Is this,
I think you have, and I think it's more so my enthusiasm about the prospects.
Yeah, same.
With your willingness to do it means I'm not afraid to say, yeah, I think you look up at the end of the year, Washington could be the third place team. I don't think you'll ever look at them and say, yeah, they're the third best team in this division. But I think at the end of the year, they could be in third place and you would be like, okay, yeah, I guess that makes sense. If what I'm saying makes sense, you're never going to say that's the third best roster. But right. I think they could end up in third place because of some other teams like the Mets and the Marlins just underperforming in this division.
Yeah, and I mean, that would be a situation where, I mean, I have them at 74 wins. 74 wins could be your third place team in this division, depending on how the Mets and the Marlins perform. I mean,
what is this, the Central all of a sudden?
I mean, hey, this was the NL East up until like a couple years ago. The NL East from like 2019 through 2021 was kind of sad.
Yeah.
2021, I mean, that was the year the Braves were under 500.
Yeah.
Under five. No, they won the division. They were under 500 up until like August.
That's right.
And then they were able to win the division. They were in the 80s with their win total. So
88 and 73. I mean, That's right.
So this division, I mean, just a few years ago was kind of like this. And then the last couple of years, it was like, oh, wow. Especially, I mean, 2022 was the peak of this division. That was like, oh, my gosh, you got two like juggernauts. And then the team that ends up going to the World Series, a third place team. But this time, I don't know. I think if I'm comparing best case scenario, worst case scenario with Miami, New York, and Washington, like I just don't see. I guess it's relative to expectations. Like, expectations are the lowest for Washington out of those three teams. Mm-hmm. And I think that they have the greatest chance of those three teams to exceed expectations because of you get some of these prospects up, and I think it could be kind of a fun team. Now, granted, fun meaning they're still a 74-75 win team, but I don't know. I wasn't expecting to kind of be this high on Washington compared to these other teams, but as right. we've been going through it, I'm like, I don't know. I think they could be, again, third place, 75 wins.
I think the big thing with this division for me is, like you said, the expectations for each of these teams are wildly different. Both Atlanta and Philly, the expectations, the World Series, like nothing less than making the World Series. Whereas the Mets and Nationals don't really have high expectations, but people are higher on the Mets than Washington. And I don't know what the Marlins' expectations are simply because, like, if nobody watches your team, do you really have expectations, right? Like, they made the postseason last year. They were a playoff team last year, but they easily got... They're the ones that got the most bad. They got the worst over the offseason, right? That's... I can't figure out how to say this, but they're the ones that didn't replace the talent that they lost over the offseason. And so, I don't know what Miami fans genuinely expect from this team, but I don't expect much. And I do think that Washington's going to probably end up being the third place team, maybe the fourth. But either way, it's a two-team division here. It's Braves, Phillies.
Yeah.
I don't expect Philly really to challenge Atlanta for the division. I think Atlanta's going to win by probably 10 games or so. But it's still going to be a top-heavy team or top-heavy division here.
Well, that's the thing. You bring up expectations. I think Atlanta, it's like if they don't win 100, it's a disappointment. Or if they don't win 95, if they don't win the division, it's a huge disappointment for them. And Phillies and their fans, it's like, you're fine with the wild card. You've got so much confidence after what you did these last two postseasons. It's kind of like an NBA team that says, okay, you know what? We don't need the home field advantage or the home court advantage. We just want to get our team healthy in the postseason. We'll rest some guys. And I don't think Philly's going to be resting players and doing load management stuff. But if you're a Philly fan and you're running that team and you're on that team, you just say, hey, we like being the scrappy underdog in the postseason. We like being the road dog. We like being that team where, and it's actually a good. The way that things are structured right now, I think there's a way that you could structure the playoffs that would be more favorable for the teams that win the divisions. Because as it is right now, it's a pretty good spot for Philly where it's like, we're going to go play two road games, we win one of those, and then we're back home in that DS, and we've got such a raucous home ballpark, a very tough place to play for visiting teams. Like, this is a good... Philly just winning 90 games, that's a huge success for them. And so that's where I think it's interesting. We bring up like the differences in terms of like expectations and goals. Philly wins 88 games and they're the second wild card team. Huge success of a season. They've got all the confidence in the world to do what they've done the last couple of years again. And the fact that they surprisingly lost to Arizona last year, I think that kind of puts another chip on their shoulder.
At home too.
Yes. Shocking. That was shocking. So,
in Citizens Bank Park, they had two chances to close it out and couldn't do it. And I think that's, like you said, that's a motivating factor. I do think there is an issue with Philadelphia on the floor. I think is lower than Atlanta. You can take, I kind of feel confident you could take any one player out of Atlanta's lineup, and that team still has a pretty good chance at winning 100 games. Now, if you take Ronald Acuna Jr. out of there, they probably don't win 100 games. They still win the division, though. And I feel like with Philadelphia, there's a handful of players, if you take out of that lineup, if you take out Trey Turner, if you take out Bryce Harper, even if you take out Kyle Schwarber, that may be a significantly lowered ceiling and lowered floor for that team. And so the margin for error is slimmer. But both these teams have legitimate and valid paths to the World Series because they do the things that they do really well.
Lindsay, do you want to give any other picks? Like, let me ask you this.
Okay.
Do you have the Braves winning the National League?
This is the year, I'm hesitant to put it on the record. This is the year, I think, when Atlanta's best chance to win the National League and make the World Series over the Dodgers because you still have Max Fried and the Dodgers are not going to have Shohei Ohtani pitching, and they're not going to have Yamamoto in his first year of adjusting to the majors. So I do think this is the year for Atlanta to make the World Series. My Cy Young for the division, you didn't ask for these, but my Cy Young for the division, I've got Spencer Strider. I think this is the year he flirts with 300 strikeouts. I mean, wow. He led the league in strikeouts last year with 280 and change, yeah, and then added a ridiculous curveball. So I have that. And my MVP in the division, until he proves otherwise, I think it's still Ronald Acuña Jr.
All right. So a lot of hardware for this team. Lindsay, we're running out of time here. So do you have anything else on this division that you want to touch on?
It's going to be fun all season to watch. Stay tuned for it.
Stay tuned. Okay. Lindsay, tell us about the projects and stuff that you've got going on, how people can follow your work and what you've got putting out this whole season. Because, hey, this is great because we got Braves fans checking this out. We got Marlins fans. We got fans of other teams, NL East coverage. This is your guy right here, big NL East guy.
Yep. So I'm on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. It's the hub for everything. A lot of, like we've talked about, a lot of what I do is National League East focused. I'm the managing editor of BravesToday.com and InsideTheMarlins.com. Both of those are Sports Illustrated's hubs for those two teams through their partnership with Fan Nation. And then when I have time, I do a little bit of writing for fun on college baseball as well. I always tweet those articles out, but that's at auburndaily.com. So just a lot of baseball going on with me.
Awesome. Well, Lindsay, thank you so much for your time. It was great to finally get a chance to collab, and I'm sure we'll do it again soon.
Absolutely, buddy. Thanks for having me.
All right, y'all. That concludes our NL East preview here on the Jack Vita Show. Awesome having Lindsay on. As you guys can see, I'm not in my studio. I'm actually out at spring training. I got a dog sleeping behind me. I'm pet sitting at a house. Instead of doing an Airbnb, I'm pet sitting at someone's house. So lighting was not as great today. Hopefully the internet was okay. I'm kind of on the road for the next at least few weeks, potentially months. So we'll make the best of it. So my apologies if the lighting wasn't great, but hopefully you guys enjoyed the audio and the conversation today. We've got three more of these coming out. So next week, we've got the AL Central with Dan O'Dowd from MLB Network. We've got the AL East, and then we've got the NL Central. So be on the lookout for those. Make sure you guys are all subscribed here to the Jack Vita Show here on YouTube or Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is that you get your podcasts. And you can follow me for more updates, more content at Jack Vita Show on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Until next time, I'm Jack Vita. Bring in the dancing lobsters.